Hey, Jason. I'm Very Worth It, by the way. I think they were looking for Sophia because if they lost me, then if they survived, then I would be the next generation. And if they were ever able to get more people, then I would be a key to that. So I'm very worth looking for, Mr. Jason.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Walking Dead Week in Review, episode 47. I'm Jason, and with me is Jeff and our awesome cast member, Casey. How you two doing?
Doing great. And yeah, Jason, she's worth it.
She is worth it.
I love that kid.
You just like that she told me off, didn't you?
Of course.
But you were going to play the uncut
version. She's a strong woman, just like us.
That she is, after hearing that interview that Jeff gave with her. And that was just a small snippet of it. She definitely is a very strong young woman that makes me feel bad now. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Madison. I'm sorry, Sophia. I was wrong. You should be alive right now so that Beth isn't the only one that Carl can go after.
Well, especially since he was originally interested in her anyway.
Right, yeah. That's true.
It's like losing. It's like Rick went through his first, or Rick. Carl went through his first girlfriend without ever actually realizing that it was his first girlfriend.
Yes.
Well, apparently he likes older women, so.
Yeah. I actually just saw a thing that the girl that plays Beth is actually much older than 17. Like, closer to, you know, 30.
Wow.
Yeah, I read that. She's like 27, 28.
Yeah.
So they better not ever do a Carl and her hookup.
I know. That would just get, like, really creepy now. Because the kid that plays Carl, Chandler Riggs, he's actually pretty close to the age of Carl, isn't he?
Yeah, he's really like 12 or 13. And Carl's supposed to be, what, 10?
I think they aged him up. It seems like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think... I always thought Carl was, like, at least 12.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think so.
So that was the impression I always got. You know, even at 10 years old, I couldn't imagine a 10-year-old doing what Carl's doing. I have a nephew that's 10 years old, and there's no way he could, you know, I don't think I don't think he'd even have the
Well, Love's son just turned 10, and I don't see him having that much.
not even just the mental ability, but even the physical ability. You know, so. All right, to get a hold of us, give us a call at 503-454-6941 to leave a message on our listener feedback hotline. You can also go to creepercast.com and along the left-hand side, click on the little banner that says SpeakPipe, and I'm going to go to that right now just to make sure. But you can leave a message there just like Casey did a few weeks ago. Thank you, Casey, by the way.
No problem.
And... you can also email us at feedback@creepercast.com. We have our iTunes sweepstakes. Jeff, why don't you tell people about the iTunes sweepstakes?
In the iTunes sweepstakes, you just go to our iTunes pages, you know, the one where you might be able to find to in order to download us, unless you're already downloading us. And then you just kind of like can get there by right-clicking and going to it, I believe. But you leave us a review because we love reviews, good or bad. It doesn't matter. And tell us what you think. Tell us what you love. Tell us what you hate. We hope that you're not going to hate much. And
the reviews really helps the show, doesn't it?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Definitely. And it's helped us put together a lot of different things with this, with the show. You have something to say, Jason?
Yeah, I was going to say the way the iTunes works is the more reviews we get, the higher we rank, the more people get involved, and that's what we want. So you know this. Not only do you get something out of this, right. This giveaway, but we do too.
And that's the point, is that we get something out of this, and then you get a chance to win something. Once we get 25 for the Walking Dead Week in Review, or even 25 for the regular Creepercast show, if you happen to be following us, and you should be, because we talk about the Walking Dead there too, and we talk about horror movies. But as soon as we get 25, we're going to draw from Jason's proverbial virtual hat, and one winner from each group, or from each of the podcast reviews, gets to pick something out of our swag store.
Absolutely. So go there and leave us a review. Want to also let you know that we are on Stitcher. Do you have Stitcher? I got Stitcher. Creepercast is on Stitcher. So get Stitcher. Stitcher is an award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone. It's Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio, and now the smarter way to listen to The Walking Dead Week in Review and also the Creepercast. And with that, what do you say? Where the heck is the thing? That's not it. I lost my little sound effect. Oh, there it is. There. Get into the show. Yes. Definite professionalism on this show. The episode of season 3, episode 2 is known as Sick. And it starts off precisely the moment that episode 1 ended, where we are in the cafeteria where Daryl has his crossbow trained on a bunch of prisoners while Glenn searches the kitchen for medical supplies. The group lifts Herschel onto a metal table and wheels him out. The prisoners stare at the horror as Herschel's severed leg is lying on the floor.
Ouch.
On the way back to the rest of the group, Daryl fends off walkers as they rush Herschel through the prison halls. They reach the cell block and transfer Herschel to his bunk, where Rick orders Glenn to stay by Herschel's side. He says, "If he dies, you need to be there for that." This was such a fantastic and fast-paced opening. I loved it because it's really, I love the chaotic nature that they had with this.
Yeah, well, it was a chaotic nature, but Rick still standing up and, you know, giving orders and knowing what needs to be done when.
Yeah. He's really shown himself to be a good leader, I think.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it's like Lori was saying, well, she said a little bit later that he moved really fast and he knew just what to do.
That's exactly it. I mean, this, you know, we talked last episode about how, you know, they become this team, this mobile infantry unit, if you will. And this is really just shows that, you know, even when they're not fighting as a unit, even doing something just as transporting an injured soldier, that they still work as, you know, this well-oiled machine. And even in all the chaos that's going on, you had Daryl fighting off walkers. You had T-Dog making sure that they weren't being, you know, that the prisoners weren't getting too close to them. You had Rick as the commander. You had Glenn and Maggie basically pushing the gurney with Herschel. I mean, everybody was, without even saying a word, was doing the part that they needed to do to get Herschel back to safety quick enough.
Yeah, they worked as a well-oiled machine, no doubt.
So then they get back. Daryl, T-Dog, and Rick stop the prisoners from entering the cell block and learned that the men have been locked in the cafeteria for 10 months. Yes, 10 years. 10 years they've been locked.
It's a long time. Wow.
Meanwhile, nobody in our group has aged 10 years.
No, yeah. Nobody in our group has aged 10 years.
Doctor Who's involved somewhere. I just know it.
So I love the interaction between all of them.
Today's your lucky day, fellas. You've been pardoned by the state of Georgia. You're free to go.
What you got going on in there?
Ain't none of your concern.
Don't be telling me what's my concern.
Children. Joe's leg is messed up. Sides, we're free now. Why are we still in here?
Man's got a point.
Yeah, and I gotta check on my own lady.
Group of civilians breaking into a prison you got no business being in. Got me thinking there ain't no place for us to go.
So that's pretty perceptive of him, you know, just by basically seeing that, you know, that they're coming into a prison when obviously a prison is a place that everybody wants to get out of.
That seems to be the only time he showed any smarts in the whole episode.
No, I do have to give that to, what the hell is his name?
Tomas,
thank you. I have to give that to Tomas. In this episode, he actually was actually planning things out. And after watching this a second time, I think what happens later in the episode between him and Rick, he actually planned out quite a ways ahead of time, but just didn't tell people about it. And Rick obviously was a little bit faster at reacting, and he reacted a different way than Tomas expected.
So you mean he planned way ahead that he was going to try to kill Rick?
That he was going to try to kill Rick and the rest of the people. He knew Rick was the leader, and that if he took Rick out, the rest would end up falling, and then he would have all of the food and the entire cell block. I think that was his plan the whole time. Whether it was a good plan or not, I don't know. But I doubt it, actually. But I think that he actually formulated a plan.
Really?
So
I didn't think he really planned anything, at least not that far ahead. He seemed more reactionary than anything to me. It's like he had this front that he was just trying to put up. And, you know, I don't know.
I get it.
It seemed more like he was more concerned about trying to look big to the, you know, to everybody else than like really planning anything out. That's just the way he came across.
But even the way that, you know, he talked to Rick ahead of time and everything that they were doing, I think, you know, his plan all along is he knew that he wanted to take Rick out. I don't think he actually planned how he was going to do it, but but he definitely knew that he wanted to.
Well, I can see him, like, trying to pretend, like, making little concessions here and there, like, saying, when Rick told him that he wanted to help them clear out the other cell block, and he kind of agreed to it, I could see him kind of, like, saying that just to, like, you know what I'm trying to say?
Seeing that as his opening?
Yeah.
Yeah,
was a possibility to maybe put together a plan. I don't know. I didn't get the impression that the guy had any plans at all. I mean, like Casey just said, as soon as he saw an opportunity, he took it.
Okay.
Maybe I think it was just the fact that he kept pulling out his gun, you know, every chance he got when. Clearly well,
that's
there's
a,
other
that,
people.
That's a prisoner thing, you know, gun gives you power.
And the whole point of the situation that they were in was, I mean, there you got a bunch of crazy stuff going on. So you basically have a prison riot, and he saw an opportunity to use the riot as a, you know, as his hopeful chance of taking Rick out.
Right. Which is a prison thing.
Yeah.
You know, that.
That's the mentality.
Yeah, that's the mentality. I actually know a few guards that. You know, one of the main reasons that there are many riots in prisons is to. Because there's a hit on somebody. So I want to jump back to the end of the conversation that Rick has with them before taking them outside. Because how much would this suck to have your eyes open to this?
There is no army. There's no government, no hospitals, no police. It's all gone.
What about my moms?
My kids. And my old lady. Yo, you got a cell phone or something that we can call our families? You just don't get it, do you? No phones, no computers. As far as we can see, at least half the population has been wiped out. Probably more.
So that's kind of reminiscent to when Rick first woke up.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
And trying to get a grip onto what the reality is. You know, all of a sudden you're like, well, you know, my wife, my family, everybody's gone. Man, I need to call them. And you don't even have that ability.
Yep.
Yeah. I was just thinking that exact same thing. That Rick kind of like, well, he was in a coma and he just got dropped right in the middle of this and had to like adapt kind of on the fly.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what, you know, this episode is really about, is the fact that Tomas has a hard time he's adapting, but he's adapting in the ways that he knows used to work, and they don't necessarily work anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
right. Which you said harkens back to Rick waking up, and he's trying to adapt to what he used to know. So yeah, it is. It's almost a repeat.
Right.
Only with a different person, different culture, different standards.
Right, exactly. So Rick then takes everyone outside to show them the aftermath of the Walker assault. And Tomas, I love the standoff between Rick and Tomas as they're trying to reclaim the cell block. And this is going to be cut number 4 right here.
This is our prison. We were here first, locked in the broom closet. We took it, set you free. It's ours. We spilled blood. We're moving back into our cell block. You'll have to get your own. It is mine. I took out personal artifacts in there. That's about as mine as it gets.
Whoa. Maybe let's try to make this work out so everybody wins.
I don't see that happening.
Neither do I.
I ain't going back in that cafeteria for one more minute.
There are other cell blocks.
You could leave. Try your luck out on the road.
So, yeah, so there we go with...
So the only word of wisdom is from Daryl.
Yeah, and really, that's really what they should have done to everyone. Is I'm not sure if it would have been better or worse for them to just say, you know what, we got the guns. There's the hole in the fence. Get the hell out and see what happens.
But Tomas was the only one that was being unreasonable. Yeah, Everybody else was trying to work with them.
I think
and that's why they were trying to work with him, though, if you think about it. I mean, everybody else was just kind of like, well, they're holding a lot more guns than we have, and they're trained on us. We should probably find an equitable way to deal with things. These are also, you can imagine, in a prison culture, Tomas was, a big cheese in some, in a clique of some sort.
Big cheese, as Jeff puts it.
Yes, I'm hearkening back to a 1950s phrase. Because who wouldn't? I mean, everything that we know
because
about
Jeff
technology.
Jeff was in the prison back when he was a T-bird.
Yes, I was in prison back in the 1950s, back when I was not even a thought in anybody's brain.
And his gang would walk around snapping fingers.
Yes, we did. We sang too. We danced. We did, and then sometimes we just went total, Clockwork Orange on people. It was fun. Anyway, the prison culture, though, he would be like a leader, of a certain clique of people.
Well, certain gang. I mean, say for what it gang, is, okay. Knows that, that's a part There's of the prison culture prison. Is that even people that have no gang affiliation, when you get into prison, that's a part of survival is joining a gang.
Right. And what makes him the leader, though, is the fact that he has little disregard for who's carrying the weapons and who has authority.
Right.
So whereas everybody else... the rest of the people in the group recognized the authority. If nothing else, they recognized there was guns that they didn't have.
Right. And he very well may have been, as Jeff puts it, a big cheese outside of the prison when he went in, which gives him that air, because you have the other ones. You have the one guy that basically is just a dope smoker.
Axel?
What's that?
You mean Axel?
You're making that assumption based on the fact that we don't know anything else about him at this point.
Well, that is true. That he said that he got caught with, or he likes his, how did he put it? He likes his
pharmaceuticals.
Right.
So we know that much about him. We get a little bit later in the episodes that he may. I'm getting a little perversion.
He's a machinist, though. We know that.
Right, but I'm also getting the way that he's looking at the girls, though. I'm getting a little CSC vibe off of him.
He has been in prison a long time.
That's true. That's true.
Well, yeah.
Kind of give him a little bit of...
and for the last 10 months, he's been,
trapped with these guys.
Yeah, trapped with 4 guys, so...
Which is prison.
Well, which is like prison within prison.
Yeah.
That's what I find interesting. And honestly, you have to admit, between all four of them, he was a woman.
That's what I find the most interesting about this episode, or about this episode, though, is that they're given the opportunity to just leave and they won't take it, which is something that we know that, you know, psychologically, we've all, this has all been pounded into our heads that, like, you know, the reason why we have criminals that make a life out of it, career criminals, is because once they get on the outside, they don't know what to do. This is a case where these guys had every opportunity to leave. And of course, walkers would stop you, but they've obviously been able to handle themselves around some walkers. So when they're given the opportunity to leave, it's like, hey, you've been pardoned, go. And they're like, no, I'm used to this.
Didn't Big Tiny, wasn't he saying, let's just go?
Yeah, Big Tiny wanted to just leave.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, you know, Big Tiny, which, by the way, the actor that played Big Tiny is a Ultimate Fighter.
Really, he looks like a little cuddly teddy bear.
He kind of does look like a big teddy bear.
That's
like
what makes him ultimate.
He looks like someone that, you know, I'd want to just like climb up on his lap and cuddle in. But yes, he is an Ultimate Fighter. I do get it. There is certainly a Stockholm syndrome setting in with them, in that they realize that they're safe behind the walls. They don't want to take their chances outside. You know, it's that, you know, bird in the hand kind of deal.
I don't blame them. After seeing all of that, I wouldn't want to go anywhere either. Obviously,
then you got Tomas, the gang leader, who figures he can control everybody.
Well, and yeah. I bet you for the last 10 months, he was controlling everybody.
Yeah.
You know, well, and because he was the one with the gun. Even Big Tiny, you know, couldn't stop him. You know, Big Tiny was really the one that could really take him out no problem if he didn't have that gun.
Yeah. And then to have Rick, you can't have two alpha males in one place.
No, not two like that, no.
Well, and it's definitely two alpha males from two different backgrounds, you know, cultures, you know, backgrounds and ways of thinking, which may also have, you know, led to, you know, Tomas's his psychology. It was the fact that he's looking at a cop, which is what he's always fought against. I mean, that's the way he puts himself off to be, is that authority is something he's going to fight against. So it makes sense that they're going to go toe to toe.
Right.
Yeah. He didn't know he was a cop, though, did he?
I don't think so, because Rick wasn't wearing his cop's hat. He wasn't wearing. He was carrying the handcuffs and the. He was still carrying his equipment belt.
Yeah, I guess he just gives off that air.
Now, one thing with his belt, though, that I often wondered, even though he really had no reason to, where's his pepper spray? Because, you know, later on with many of the stuff that they dealt with people, wouldn't pepper spray be a great tool to have? Like, you know, a bunch of prisoners pop up and you want to, you know, not have to worry about them, but you don't want to kill them. Just mace them right there and then go figure it out later.
Yeah, true.
Man, just me.
That's too easy. That's too easy. You don't have a good plot for a story then.
No, I know.
Come on.
Maybe they used it. That 8 months we didn't see.
So, back inside of the cell block, Carol and Lori are dressing Herschel's bloody stump.
I'm sorry. Can I? There's one thing that I wanted to mention before we go past that point. That I think was a little bit of foreshadowing. When they were talking about when everybody went outside and Rick was showing the prisoners, you know, all the dead bodies and everything. And Andrew asked how they got in. Daryl told him about the hole in the fence. So I was wondering if that was a little bit of foreshadowing of how he got back in, or maybe.
I think so. You know, basically saying that, you know, all we had to do to get in here was to cut a stupid little hole in the fence. He realized that, oh, evidently that's all I need to do to get in and out.
Yeah, so I was wondering about that. But go ahead. I wanted to mention that.
No, that's great. Heading back inside, Carol and Lori are dressing Herschel's bloody stump, wishing they had more medical supplies.
Oh, I need bandages.
We used everything we had.
We'll get more, anything. I'll go get the towels from the backpack next to my bed.
Is he gonna die?
No, he's gonna be okay. He's gonna be okay. I think you can stabilize him.
I need to keep his leg elevated. Get some pillows. He's already bled through the sheets.
You can burn the wound to clot the blood. I can start a fire.
God, no, please don't.
No, the shock could kill him.
It's not gonna stop the arteries from bleeding. We need to just keep it dressed and let it heal on its own.
So that was an earlier cut that we didn't really have a chance to play, but I thought it fit in right here because that's something that, you know, they really have to deal with in this episode up until later when Crazy Carl goes after and gets some of the stuff. But, I mean, you know, they're worrying about his bloody stump and him becoming septic from it. And then on top of that, you have Carol worrying about Lori's childbirth. Being that, you know, even though Herschel showed her a couple things, she's the only one that knew, or she's the only one that could help her if Herschel dies.
Yeah, there was a lot to deal with. If Herschel dies, she's the only
closest thing
to
their
doctor,
medical.
Their nurse. Yeah, and she doesn't even know half of what he knows.
No, I like how you put that, though. That would be like having, you know, your surgeon die, and the next best thing you have is the nurse to do surgery on you.
Yeah. Oh, I wouldn't. The thought of being pregnant in that situation, I can't imagine. It must be terrifying.
The only thing worse than that would be to have Jeff be the only one there to deliver.
Not really.
What, you don't have experience delivering babies?
I was going to say, not really, but I don't have experience, but I do have the know-how. So that puts me in the half category. Nice try, Jason.
Besides,
it's easy. You just stab him in the stomach.
And rip.
And rip. I mean, Carol taught us that.
Yeah, grip and rip.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on, Tomas takes Rick, Daryl, and T-Dog into the pantry, which they say, you know, you can have like a couple things. But this pantry is incredibly well stocked.
Yeah.
I mean, and why not? Why wouldn't it be? I mean, on a cell block, you know, that pantry had to supply food for how many thousands or hundreds of inmates?
Right.
So, you know, you take that and you only have a couple people. You're talking years worth of food.
You can
I love how big Rick and Daryl's eyes got when they saw that food. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. And Tomas is like, you can have a couple cans of Spam and some a bag of rice.
Some tuna.
Yeah, some tuna. It's like, no. And then, of course, one of my favorite parts of the episode was when Rick walked into the, this.
That's what you call a little bit of food.
It goes fast.
Mm-hmm. You know, you can have a bag of corn, some tuna fish.
You said half. That's the deal. What's in there?
Don't open that.
You wanted to know.
Can't wait for my old pot to piss in.
Just the subtle way that they told why it smelled so bad is great.
Yeah, that was really good. Oh.
But then you have that like moment afterwards where you're thinking about how much that would suck being stuck in there and like, yeah, we've got all the food and water we need, but we have to go to the bathroom someplace.
And that gives you a really kind of an ugly image to, are they using pots or are they just going on the floor? What are they doing?
Whatever they're doing, they're sealing it up in there so that they don't have to smell it all the time.
Which pretty much implies they're just doing it wherever.
Yeah.
I mean, that whole room is the bathroom.
Yeah, basically, yeah. The whole freezer became the bathroom.
Oh, I wouldn't even want to go in there, but I guess you have to if you have to.
Yeah. So then we head back into the cell block where Glenn comforts Maggie, who's worried about Herschel's chances of survival with only one leg. He can't even walk, she cries. All we do is run. Maggie, you know, I kind of felt for her. I was wondering if she was being realistic, pessimistic. I'm not sure. Beth was obviously being optimistic, sewing up a leg of the pants.
Yeah, it's kind of a funny reversal since Beth was the one that was, she tried to kill herself, you know? So you think she'd be more the pessimistic one.
Yeah, that's a good point. Jeff has nothing to say. He just makes noises.
Huh. Interesting.
Indubitably.
I'm doing my best to Oscar, actually. I'm just like, oh, you're not a lesbian? Interesting.
But seeing everything that they've seen, I can understand her not wanting to get her hopes up. They really haven't experienced this kind of thing before where somebody got bit and lived, so I can understand her wanting to, like, you know, be realistic about it.
No, that's a good point, because this is the first that anybody has dealt with of somebody actually living from a walker bite.
And well, out of everybody in the group, though, at this point, Maggie's the only one that is being realistic. Because, I mean, Beth has gone kind of, you know, she's kind of in a la-la land.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
And it's so she's going to be looking at, she's not looking at it as this is the end-all be-all. She's just going, eh, well, just in case, he's going to need a legless pants.
Right.
You know, and whereas Maggie is just like, oh my God, we're going to lose Dad. Well, as the older one of the group, you would expect her to do that, for one. And they haven't necessarily been running, from what I get, though, because they've been, you know, killing everything that they come across. They've just been traveling, trying to find a better, safer place. And Maggie's sick of that because they had that for a while, and then it was suddenly ripped away from her. Maggie was Herschel back when Rick, you know, threw it all in his face in season two. It's like, this is the way it really is. Well, this Maggie's dealing with this in smaller doses.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah.
And she's a lot better at adapting. That's the other thing, is that Herschel wasn't real good at adapting. He needed that slap across the face. Maggie can take it in slow doses and then move on from that. Beth is in another world.
Yeah, but at the same time, she doesn't want to give up hope. She already lost her mother. She doesn't, you know, I can understand why she doesn't want to just, she thinks of it as giving up.
And giving her up boyfriend. On, yeah. Don't forget about her boyfriend.
Yeah. And her, yeah.
Yeah.
Her boyfriend that she went on one date and evidently had to spend the rest of his life with.
Well, 3 months.
Well, lucky for her, his life was really short.
Yeah, that's true. That's why I said the rest of his life, not her life.
Yeah. I can see both of their points. So I didn't want to think about Herschel dying either, because I love that old man.
Yeah, he's so cuddly too. So moving on,
and he's really awesome at helping young fledgling serial killers. Oh wait, that's a different.
That is very true. That is very true.
It's a different movie altogether. I'm sorry.
Rick and T-Dog return to the cell block with sacks of food. Lori says Herschel is feverish, but still has isn't feverish, but still has labored breaths and a low pulse. Rick instructs Glenn to handcuff Herschel just in case. I like that because, you know, that's Rick going with being optimistic, but being realistic at the same time.
Yeah, that made perfect sense.
And so, you know, and then this next part, I've got two cuts coming up right here. These are the conversation between Rick and Lori. And again, I feel so bad now with the rewatch, because so many times I should have felt bad for Lori and should have been, you know, more on Lori's side. And I wasn't, because of what she did at last year's season finale. But now looking back, she really is trying. So I want to give cut number six and cut number seven.
Yeah.
So what about those prisoners?
We're going to help them clear out their own cell block, and then they'll be there, and we'll be here.
Living beside each other.
I'm not giving up this prison.
Do they have guns?
I only saw one. Yeah. I don't know if it's going to work.
Well, what are your options?
Kill him.
If that's what you think is best.
So, you know, this goes from last year. We have Rick telling Lori what he had to do with Shane, which was kill him. And she became so horrified, she pushed him away. And that started the, to me, that's where this whole Rick and Lori separation really started. Is because when Rick needed her for comfort, she pushed him away last year. And then we got the Ricktatorship speech. Now, here's her coming full circle and her saying, do what you need to do, what's best for us.
Yeah, the thing with that is, I think that scene was the only time that she really did turn against him. Other than that, she's always been pretty supportive of him. She defends him. She defended him against Carol, and she's always been on his side, except for that one instance. That's why I think it was such a blow.
See, what we don't know, though, is how long that went on during the 10 months or 10 months during the 8 months that they were on the road.
Yeah, that's true. We could have just
make the assumption that we had a bunch of weary travelers that just followed their leader blindly is pretty much the impression we're left with.
Well, yeah, but that's the leaders. I'm talking about Lori and Rick.
Right, and she was just one of them. I mean, we don't know if there was ever any opportunity for either of them to breach the subject of each other. And
well,
it's an interesting dynamic that you actually bring up with that, is that it's the lack of knowledge that kind of makes it look like 8 months didn't really go by.
Yeah, it really does. Cause it, you know, the fact that we didn't see what happened really in that 8 months outside of people getting scruffier and, you know, becoming better, warriors is that, we don't know what happened in that 8 months, if they ever tried, you know, reconciling or anything, or if Lori spent a good amount of time pushing Rick away, blaming him for what happened with Shane, and at the same time, Rick blaming Lori for what he had to do to Shane.
We have nothing but, yeah, exactly. We have nothing but to make assumptions.
It is true. My thought on it was that I don't think she was, I think that was a, like a gut reaction. I don't think she spent the whole time on the road pushing him away. I think my thought was that one time where she, I'm trying to get my thoughts together. That one scene where at the end where she pushed him away, I think that's when he kind of like just started to close himself off. And when she tried to talk to him about it, that's when he just wouldn't hear of it. Because he was talking about, can we go a little bit ahead and,
yeah.
You know, because it was reminding me of that scene where he was talking to her on the telephone. Can I mention that?
Yeah, you can mention that. That's fine.
Where he was saying that all he was focusing on was just keeping her and Carl and the baby alive. So, and he was willing to deal with, you know, getting back together with her later on after he had everything settled. So
it could be that we were blaming the wrong person, that we should have been blaming Rick rather than blaming Lori.
I think that's a little strong. But because it was Lori's decisions that drove him on the path he went.
Yeah, right from the beginning.
So it's, you can't really say that to that extreme. I mean, it's more of, we're contemplating what happened during that 8 months based on what we know that happened from here on out.
Well, and on top of that, don't forget, their marriage was on the rocks even before the apocalypse
happened. Well, that's why I would say that we were pretty much looking at a relationship that was already on hold.
Right, exactly.
Once season two ended.
Right. Well, no, their relationship was on the rocks. You know, we know from flashbacks.
Right.
Before the apocalypse happened. So really all the apocalypse really did, and hit, you know, Rick getting shot and everything, that just kind of postponed the inevitable.
Well, if you're going to go that far back, though, you have to consider the fact that when he was reunited with her, he wanted to take it back to square one with her.
He thought he was doing that until
he started to get manipulated in the situation with what's Shane. His name? Yeah, with Shane, the dead guy, happened. And that's when he basically put all his feelings on hold as well. In order for him to be able to make the comment that I just wanted to make sure my wife and my child were safe before I worried about our relationship. And then you also have to take into consideration that he didn't go that far. I mean, he worried about everybody. I mean, it wasn't a case of he wanted to keep just those two people safe. He kept everybody safe. So, and I know the argument can come up that that's the only people that he worked for. Well, no, it's not, because everybody ended up rallying around him and doing what he had expected from them. He used them as tools, like a good leader would, in order to protect the two most important things in his life. He also protected them, and they knew that. So it's this round robin game. And so the inevitable that you're talking about is, yeah, there was going to be a definite breakdown between the two of them. But that was happening. He was already in stone mode to where he was moving on and doing whatever he could just to get everything to a certain point. Now, if they would have made it to Eden and everybody would have been happy and they'd have been able to eat whenever they wanted to and all that other stuff, do you think that – the question here is, do you think that Rick and Lori would have exploded?
I don't know if it would have exploded the way that they did, but I think they would have still had that breakdown because they had it before the apocalypse happened. So they were already, the only thing that the apocalypse did is the same thing that, you know, somebody getting sick at, you know, when you're going through a divorce and somebody gets sick and you decide to, you know, hold off on the divorce or something because, you know, you still have feelings for them enough to the point that, you know, you don't want to hurt them anymore. You want to be reunited, stuff like that. But it doesn't make the situation go away. All it does is postpone what's happening between you two in the relationship.
When you're talking logically, yes. But when you're talking about what happens to people truly and emotionally, it didn't do that. I mean, for Rick, it meant a new beginning.
Well, don't forget
and
the first
it
two.
It wasn't until the Shane situation.
Yeah, but don't forget the first two seasons only took place in less than a month.
Well, you're going to start. I mean, you wake up and find out that, you know, you wake up and the first thing you're thinking about is, I need to get back with my wife. We need to make amends. And then when you make amends with her, you find out your best friend has been sleeping around with her.
He didn't get back with her because he needed to make amends. He needed to get back to his wife because he needed to find his wife and kid.
You don't think that there was a certain level of I have to make amends in this?
Well, I don't think
that I just lost everything. I just lost everything I had. And
no,
you know,
I don't think the whole I need to make amends for anything that we've said or done came into context at that point. What came into context at that point in his mind when he woke up was, I need my wife and kid. I need my family around. I need to find out that they're safe, that they're
so
okay.
So to him, the relationship hadn't ended.
No, the relationship had not ended. All that happened was the problems they were having before the apocalypse went on hold and then got exasperated
They went away.
No, they went on hold. They didn't go away. They got frozen. It's like people that are going through a rough spot in the relationship and think that going on a vacation together makes everything better. Yeah, everything is great while they're on vacation, but they're still, all it did is it paused the problems.
And I would actually ask our listeners to actually make commentary about this, because I'm really curious about what other people think as to whether or not, you know, the Rick and Lori situation was doomed from the beginning, or if it was the fact that Rick maybe thought he got the chance to start over again because he was doing, you know, going to find the people that he cared about the most. That's basically what we're arguing about here. And I'd like to hear what Walking Dead Week in Review listeners have to say about that.
Can I jump in?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes,
I was just going to throw to you.
I kind of fall on the on Jeff's point of view in this one. I don't think their relationship. I think the fact that they're in an apocalypse is it kind of changes everything. That all of their problems that they had before doesn't it don't really matter anymore. Now all they have left is for them to come together.
All they have left is each other. The problems that existed before don't because the world before doesn't exist anymore.
No, but the feelings still do.
True.
The animosity still does.
No, animosity does still exist. I won't argue that. But the he was willing to, I think Rick was willing to put the animosity aside, believing that that she was all he had left. Him, her and Carl was all he had left and basically gave up all the other bullshit.
Yeah, but that, then once once the honeymoon moment is over.
Right, exactly. So we have what we have here is a Florence Nightingale, you know, kind of Stockholm syndrome going on.
What?
I mean, we have this weird combination of things going on because it's the idea that
I don't think as you mean what you think of that mean.
No, definitely not Florence Nightingale. But anyway, no, I mean,
I don't know what that means either.
The Florence no, Nightingale effect is a soldier falling in love with the nurse that takes care of him.
The context he's using it in.
No, I'm trying to make this weird conglomeration of what's going on because that's kind of – it is a weird conglomeration. Basically what it comes down to is that the world that made these two, Lori and Rick, at odds with each other doesn't exist anymore. That being the case, Rick wasn't going to cling to that. But he didn't need to because there was more things to get in his way. And that's
like
what made
Shane.
Him to, yeah, that was what made him into what he became. So it has nothing to do with, basically what I'm arguing is that it doesn't start from the beginning for Rick. He actually started over again.
Well, if that's the case, then how come in season two, they showed the flashback of him and Shane talking about the problems that hit
show us. I think to show us that the Shane and Lori relationship was already getting bad.
The Shane, you mean the Shane and Lori relationship was already starting?
Yes. Remember I said that way back then, is that I thought that that was proof that, you know, the Shane and Lori relationship was already beginning. And it was just an opening for Shane.
Okay.
Because he was already the guy that was there for Lori to cry on his shoulder. So it's a perfect opportunity. I mean, let's think about the way men think, Jason. I know we don't like to give away our secrets, but...
That's why we always become the best friend.
Exactly.
The whole point is that we're there when she's crying, and then when they break up, we're there to swoop in. How come that never happens in real life?
But it works on TV. Look at Shane.
And it works and it works in movies when they chase after him in an airport.
So true. But and then just like what happens
John
in real
Hughes
life
movies.
Though, yes, you always have to make reference to the movies. But just like what happens in real life, though, things never go the way you think they're going to, which is what happened to Shane, is he figured that he had it. There was no way. I mean, it's like, yes, his best friend woke up, and he doesn't want to have animosity towards his best friend or hate him or anything. And he's thinking, well, I've been with his wife for a long time. She's going to stick up for me. And what did she do? She turned her back on him. It's all it all makes sense.
All right, let's move on to
talking about that. We spent a lot of time talking about that, and I still want to hear from our listeners.
Yes, so do I. I want to hear from you guys. Casey, any last things before I go on to Lori's next cut?
I don't know. I'm kind of speechless. I don't know where to jump in now.
All right.
Except for I never did agree that. Well, when Shane told Rick that he didn't start an affair with her until after Rick was in the coma. I believe him about that. I don't think it went beyond that.
No, that's all talk. The relationship was in his head long before it happened.
Yeah. Yeah, it was an emotional relationship long before...
You mean he was in love with her?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was an emotional relationship.
He was in love with her
before,
since high school because they make that reference in the first episode.
Yeah, long before it was a physical relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I can go with that.
All right, let's go to the Mother of the Year Award.
Look, I know that I'm a shitty wife and I'm not winning any Mother of the Year Awards. But I need you to know that for one second, do I think there's malice in your heart? You're not a killer, and I know that. So do whatever you got to do to keep this group safe. And do it with a clear conscience.
And that won her the Mother of the Year award.
Yes. with what I like about that line, though, is the whole malice in your heart part. Because really, that's the difference between the good guy and the bad guy. Isn't the fact that, you know, one kills and one doesn't. They both kill. But the difference between Tomas and Rick is that Tomas will kill with malice. Rick will kill out of necessity.
Right. And I like that scene because it shows that she's still trying to be supportive of him. And he's struggling with the people that he's had to kill. So she's trying to like remove a little bit of that guilt from him. If she can. So, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah. And I think, you know, and I like the way that she's supporting Rick. That's the thing is, I really feel bad now for being mad at Lori that whole time, up until she died. Because now that I look back at her actions and everything she's doing, she is trying so hard to make amends and be a good person and be good to Rick and Carl and everyone. There's nothing that really pisses me off like she did in the second season. Second season, I hated her, but the problem is all of that hatred spilled over to this season, and none of that is there that she's doing like she did in last season where she was a manipulator.
I think that's true of a lot of people. They hate her. They hated her all the way until the end, and they never really saw, like you said, the times where she's trying to be supportive and she's trying to be, you know, a good wife. They just see the mistakes that she made, and she's been kind of demonized.
Well, I think because some of the mistakes that she made were calculated mistakes. As me and Jeff would put it, many a times between Rick and Shane, Lori was there almost like a devil on their shoulders.
The only thing I feel that was calculated was that one scene where she told, where she was telling Rick about Shane, whispering in his ear the Lady Macbeth scene.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and then you had the one later on where she went up and talked to Shane when he was up on the tower.
I think that was a mistake. I don't believe she was trying to be manipulative.
That was clothed in the idea of an apology. The problem is that she wasn't trying to be manipulative, but she was. That's the thing, is the differentiation between the way men think and the way women think, is that she thinks she's just apologizing for, you know, being a bitch that doesn't, you know, agree with everything he's doing, but he's reading that as she's backing me up 100%.
Right. Yeah, that the only thing standing in my way of us two being together is Rick.
Yeah, and in all reality, she should have been aware of that causing that.
I mean, at that point, how can you not be aware that Shane is a little bit unstable now?
At that point.
Yeah, at that point. Exactly.
Is it just my female brain? Because I don't understand how he took that out of what she said.
It may be the female brain.
It may be that because I mean that's the problem that Jason and I are having right now as well, is that we're giving away guy secrets.
Yes, I'm going to give you a tip. If you tell a guy that the only thing standing between you and him being together is another guy, he will find a way to get that other guy out of the equation. Yeah.
Get rid of the other guy, and we can be together.
Right. I mean that's how a guy takes it.
I don't know. You know how much I hate Shane, so
and especially an unstable guy like Shane.
Did really understand how unstable he was? He hit it pretty well for a while.
Well, Well, his instability, though, was almost, I'm going to go with like a 90 percentile here, was 90% based on the reaction he was getting from her.
Right.
I mean, if he believed that, basically he was believing that everything he did, she was accepting of and was, you know, going to, I mean, this is a guy that was totally convinced by the way she acted around every decision that he made, that if Rick was eliminated somehow, no matter how it happened and what story he went home with, she was going to go running into his arms.
Right. Because in his mind, she just needed to be with someone.
Yeah. And it might as well be him because he's the better one.
Right.
So he said.
Yeah, so he said.
Exactly. And that's the problem when you have, first you have the way that guys think, and then you have somebody unstable like Shane, and you have no rule of law to kind of act as a moral compass.
That, yeah.
Then, exactly. Then you end up with what happened with Rick and Shane. And then you have, you know, and then that's the start of people hating Lori.
Pretty much, yeah. Some of what she did may have been, and I admitted this right from the start, some of what she did may have been, you know, innocent.
Unintentional,
what she did at
yeah.
first. Or unintentional. Okay, well, I'll go with that one better because innocent is definitely not the right word. But, you know, some of it was unintentional. But once she saw the cause of her effect, she should have been able to rein that in if she really didn't want to see something bad happen. And what she did in the end was pit two of the strongest males against each other.
Right.
So you got two alphas that have to fight each other off. One of them has to come out of it. Shane believed that no matter who it was that walked out of it, she was going to want to be with him.
Well, and if you think about it, from a storytelling point of view, that's a Greek story.
Yeah. It's a tragedy and a half. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a tragedy that goes back right from the early ages of storytelling.
Well played on the writer's parts. I'm definitely going to say that.
It's definitely
and to make such a villainous out of Lori in the process was well done.
Well, and that's another Greek thing too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's always the woman's fault.
In Greek tragedies, it's always the woman's fault.
It makes me so upset that people hate her more than Shane. And when he tried to kill his best friend, his best lifelong friend.
But he never actually tried to.
He didn't?
No, he threatened. That's all he ever did. It didn't turn into a huge issue until the last minute. And then by then Shane was that far gone.
Right.
So you can't really, you have to also have to take into, you know, the mental problems that Shane was dealing with at that point. This is like, this is the zombie apocalypse we're talking about here.
Honestly, Shane needed some meds.
Yeah. Yeah.
He needed some mood stabilizers.
Yeah. Some Wellbutrin,
even some lithium.
Yeah. Lithium. That would have been great. Morphine. It's like, dope this guy up and you're going to get through a lot more. But,
all right, let's head on. Two things I want to talk about. First one coming up is when Maggie is talking to Herschel and she's sobbing. And I got to play the clip because this is actually kind of heartbreaking.
Dad, you don't have to fight anymore. If you're worried about me and Beth, don't worry about us. We'll take care of each other. We'll look out. Me, Beth, and Glenn will look out. Go ahead, Dad. It's okay. Be peaceful. Get it to fight.
That was definitely the most sombering moment of the entire episode.
It was, but at the same time, it was such a contradiction. I mean, I'm looking back at it going, you know, Herschel never actually fought against or fought for anything except keeping his family innocent.
Together.
When it comes down
That's
to
all
it.
He cared about was keeping them together.
But it was using, he was using the, you know, the innocence to keep them together. The fact that they didn't know anything and keeping everybody dumb was, I mean, including himself. I mean, I'm not saying that he was a mastermind or anything. I mean, by his own admission, he didn't really know what was happening. But it was by keeping everybody not knowing what's happening and believing in what he said that he kept everybody pretty much dumb for a while until Rick came along. The other thing that I'm not saying that I love Herschel's character and all, but so don't get me wrong on that one. And the guy who plays Herschel is great. But imagine how you would feel if you had given that kind of a speech to one of your parental figures to find out that he's going to be just fine.
Yeah, I was saying, I hope he didn't hear all of that.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I think it's great that he did. I mean, if he did, because basically, you know, all she was doing is she was saying is, you know, the goodbyes.
She was giving him permission to die.
Yeah, and you know what? I know my father did that to my grandpa when he had cancer and he was in a coma. I mean, you know, and it's not just for the sake of the person dying, but it's also for the sake of the person surviving. That allows you to handle a person's death easier.
But if you go through all the trouble of handling the death and then it doesn't happen, what does that do?
Nothing. It's a zero-sum gain.
Well, exactly. It eliminates everything that just happened. So the whole thing was doesn't exist.
No, but the feeling still existed.
Okay. I'll buy that. I mean, obviously the emotion has to exist, but the part of it that bugged me out of that is that he came out of it. I mean, yes, I wasn't going to say unscathed because he's very much scathed. And then the other part of it is that as far as a story writer's point of view, is now we have to worry about when they finally do knock Herschel off. Is that they've already given us a death scene. So what's going to happen later if it actually does happen?
It'll be better.
It'll be better.
It'll be better.
Herschel's going to outlive everyone. Yeah.
I think he will. He's moving back into his old house. He's gonna find some, some grandma to raise Judith with, along with Glenn and Maggie. They're gonna be
they'll
a happy
start a new
family.
Commune. They'll start a new commune.
No, they're gonna head back to their old farm. They're gonna live out their life on the farm.
And he'll be even better. He'll be even a better cult leader because he survived the Walker apocalypse and he almost got eaten.
Right. All right. So
speaking of cult leaders, though.
Meanwhile, while all that's happening, you have Daryl and Rick teaching the prisoners how to fight walkers. And this is what ends up coming out of it.
I love that scene, by the way.
Taking on walkers prison riot style.
when they're rib smashing those walkers, I'm just like, this is great. This is awesome TV right here.
And I love how Rick and Dale just or Dale. Daryl.
Yeah, Daryl just look at each other.
Just
like,
look at
the
each other and stand back like, I thought we just told them.
Yeah, the look on their face was pretty priceless. First time I saw that scene, I just laughed and laughed.
Well, that's when I first also came to the realization that Daryl and Rick are a definite team.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is when they're actually able to have that moment of levity where they just look at each other and be like, what the heck's going on?
Don't forget Theodore Douglas.
T-Dog?
T-Dog. Yep.
He was there too, sharing the moment.
Yeah, it was all of them. I mean,
yeah, it was all three of them. The sad thing is that T-Dog got taken away from us in that moment, very shortly after that moment.
He's alive in our heart.
He is. I kind of wish that he would have had a bigger ending, but, you know, for what he did, he will be remembered.
Did you hear Axel say, you want to taste me?
Yes. Like, I was waiting, I swear as I watched this, I was waiting for, like, them to try shanking them. Did they shank any of them?
No, there was some stabs, yes.
There was? Okay.
There was some stabs.
In the midsection.
Yeah.
like, just shank them prison style. I loved it.
Oh, yeah, it was, like, totally stomach shanked, the one walker. That's when I lost it. It was like, oh, my God, he actually shanked him.
This show is so serious that those little touches of humor, I think, are really welcome.
Yeah. All right. Moving on from there, we have Herschel's cell, Carl triumphantly presents a duffel bag filled with medical supplies.
I thought you were organizing the food.
Even better. Check it out.
Where did you get this?
Found the infirmary. Wasn't much left, but I cleared it out.
You went by yourself?
Yeah.
Are you crazy?
No big deal. I killed two walkers.
All right, do you see this? This was with the whole group.
We needed supplies, so I got them.
I appreciate that.
Then get off my back.
Carl!
She's your mother. You can't talk to her like that.
Then you get off my
back. Listen, I think it's great that you want to help.
It's the zombie apocalypse. Just get over it.
Get off my back, bitch.
Carl's getting a little too big for his britches there.
Well, I do like the. I do
Casey
like.
Casey actually said britches.
I do like the fact that the idea that you should honor thy mother and thy father was still present in that scene. But at the same time, Lori should have just shut up.
No, but she had a point.
I'll agree with Casey.
She can't keep him, you know, innocent for much longer.
No, I do agree with Casey though. Here's what I'll say. Carl is a good warrior. He is not a good soldier.
Right.
In that rogue. He's a good warrior because he sees a problem, he reacts to the problem very quickly, very efficiently. He's a good fighter, and he's brave. But at the same time, in order to be a good soldier, you have to be able to take orders. Not abandon your post or go on missions that end up putting you in as much jeopardy as the person you're trying to save.
And he went rogue.
Yeah. So in agreeing with Casey there, he probably shouldn't have went. Yes, it worked out well for everyone. But at the same time, he's not somebody that means that you can't depend on him when you need to.
I think this is a lesson learned for him. I think he won't do that anymore, hopefully. Just run off without telling anyone.
Yeah, the going rogue part was wrong, but it was a mission that he undertook. But you also got to think in terms of if he would have approached anybody and said, hey, I can do this, do you think anybody would have let him?
No, and also from a kid's point of view, if he's anything like I was when I was a kid or I am now, when you get a thought in your head, you're just going to react. And that's a part of being a kid. That's why kids do dumb things, is because they don't look at the consequences afterwards. There's actually studies that show a part of their amygdala or something isn't fully developed. And that's why they do impulsively dumb things.
But look at the consequences in this situation, too. You have to take that into consideration. Is failure is the worst possible consequence for him.
Right.
The fact that he succeeded, what's the next worst possible consequence? His mom's going to be mad at him?
I don't think he was even thinking about the next worst possible consequence.
Exactly. Well, even if he had stopped to think about it, that would have been his next possible worst consequence.
The only thing he was thinking was, is I'm going to be a hero by getting the stuff that saves his life. That, of course he is. He's a kid. That's how he thinks.
To a certain extent, yes, but I don't think that was the primary driving goal. I think the primary driving goal was that he saw a problem that needed to be solved and wanted to solve it.
Right, exactly. That's a part of him wanting to be the hero. That's how kids think.
Well, you're throwing pride into it, and I don't think it was
pride. Look at the way that he threw it down. He was proud as pig shit that he got that.
It's pig shit. You laugh at me for the references I've made. You made fun of Casey for saying bridges.
I figured I
thought it's proud as pig shit.
Now we all got one, so.
Yeah, I love this show.
I can't get back on.
But yeah, his pride was wounded when his lady love told him off.
Right, exactly. That's why it hurt him so bad when his mom and when Beth said that. It wasn't just the fact that he knew he was wrong or that if he would have done it and, they would have come back, he would have come back and said, I understand that, but this needed to be done or he would have died. Instead, he comes back and, he was so prideful that the reaction that he thought he was going to get. That's why he blew up at them.
But he said pretty much what you just said, is he was like, well, I got it. What's the problem? And that's so I don't think as much as that his pride was hurt. And I've been wanting to say something about the Beth thing is that it's like, Jason, especially because I don't know if Casey can speak on this. But come on. Like, did you ever have a babysitter that was female?
Hell yeah.
And she's like, 6-7 years older than you.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, and wasn't she like probably amongst your first 10 crushes?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's Beth for Carl.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
So he's crushing hard. Do I think that this is going to happen as a relationship? Probably not. But, I mean, obviously something more closer to Carl's age is going to have to come
along. At least not for a few years if they make it that long.
Yeah. I mean, it could grow beyond that, but somebody around Carl's age is going to have to pop up at some point because that's what happens to all of us.
You think that'll happen?
What I'm actually thinking as far as the Beth Carl, and I don't think they may never show it, but just speculating down the road, in the reality of the universe is that in a year or two down the road, because there's so few people, there's so few chances. Age doesn't quite have the same meaning in relationships as it does to us now. It's kind of like going back to, feudal.
Feudal what?
Feudal positions. No. Going back to feudal times, Romeo and Juliet, where, Juliet was, I think, 13 years old and Romeo was 17 or 18. And this is more or less what we have here.
I would argue, how well did your first crush go?
Fine.
Yeah. I mean, did you like end up on a date with your...
Absolutely not.
17, 18 year old?
No, yeah. But that's not the point.
First crushes do never, and if they do, it's pretty scary.
That's because my first crush wasn't the only girl around, and I wasn't the only boy around.
Well, there's not... There's another boy around now. He has competition.
Well, Oscar's not a boy.
I was going to say, who else now?
Well, okay, not right now, but a little ways in the future.
Oh, yes, that's right. Okay. I remember now.
Just for the record, I think Romeo and Juliet were the same age.
They weren't. Romeo was 17. Juliet was 12 or 13.
They were both 14, weren't they?
No.
Okay, you're forcing me to look this up.
I have a minor in theater.
Good job, Jason, forcing her to look stuff up.
All right, so going a little further, let's see. As they continue down the hallway, Rick instructs the prisoners to stay tight in formation. No more of that prison riot crap, he says. As the group fights a second wave, a burly prisoner... Big Tiny attempts to retreat and gets gouged by a walker. You know, I like it that he didn't even get bit. The walker just like breaks his wrist off and just scratches him.
Yeah, Tomas just beats the crap.
And then Tomas, you know, he's like, and it was so pathetic. He's like, no, I'm all right. I'm all right. Come on, guys. You don't have to do anything. I'm okay. I feel good. And Tomas is like, yeah, no.
That's him. That's him proving that he's the big important guy too. He's establishing himself,
right? So yeah. Carol ends up wrapping Herschel's leg in a fresh bandage and asks for Glenn's help with something, i.e. they're going to go out and find themselves a walker to stab in the eye so that Carol can practice C-sections. down the hallway, let's see, in the prison yard. Okay, Rick and the others reach the new cell block, and ignoring Rick's instructions to open only one door and control the flow of walkers, Tomas opens both, and a bloodbath ensues. During the melee, Tomas almost slashes Rick with a machete and then pushes a walker on top of him, but Daryl quickly intervenes to save Rick's life. Now, like I say, here's the question. Was the door legitimately jammed, or was Tomas maybe pretending?
That is the way it looked.
To me, it looked like it was legitimately jammed, but I guess it's possible.
The way he played it off, though, it looked like he was just kind of playing it.
Okay.
I mean, in my opinion, the way he kind of went, well, it's jammed. The whole attitude he had about the whole the situation made it look like he was playing it off.
I thought it was jammed. I didn't think he was faking that. But it's possible he could have been trying to...
Also, he's a leader. He's not going to be the one to open the door.
Well, it is when Rick tells him to.
But he doesn't see Rick as a leader. Rick is not his equal. Or even his leader.
Rick's the one with the gun.
That's... Okay. If you're going to take out the one person that is your only competition... And they've got a gun on you, and you have no ways of protecting yourself. What's the best way to do it?
Subterfuge, definitely.
Exactly. That's what he was doing.
Right. Yeah. But that's my question. I'm not sure if it was legitimately jammed or not. To me, it looked like it was, but he could have been faking that. And then, of course, you have the whole melee thing afterwards, and you know, that's
and then
part
shit
of
happened.
Yeah, but that's also part of why I think that he planned it. He was just looking for his opening.
He might have saw that as his opening. Yes.
Right. And so he was planning on taking Rick out at some point soon.
I think he was hoping he didn't have to. And then the whole, you know, I slipped, shit happens attitude was because he was, you know, since the walkers weren't going to do it for him, he figured he had to take a swipe himself.
Right. So let's, yes.
Seems like he thinks Rick and his group are, because they're not prisoners, he probably thinks of them as pretty soft in spite of what they did clearing out the prison.
It may have, it may be that too. You know, they don't have the street cred.
Yeah.
Because did you see the look on Rick's face when he ducked that swipe with the,
thing machete?
He swung at him?
Yeah.
If Lix could kill in that moment.
Laser shooting out of Rick's eyes.
That was like...
Rick's
yeah,
Matrix. Your Matrix backbend.
The actual funny thing about that scene for me, though, is that it actually took Daryl to pretty much, you know, like you said in the synopsis there, Daryl pretty much saved Rick's life. And it was mostly because Rick paused to look at the other guy like, really? You know, he paused to look at Tomas like, really? and in the meantime, Daryl had his back covered. I mean, granted, that's where you get to see a team working side by side to the point where Rick has enough trust over Daryl to where he can turn his back on whatever's happening and face somebody else. and give him the look of like, really, is this how you want to do it?
Mm-hmm.
But
he was planning that.
Yeah,
planning
so
his
I think
moment.
Yeah, but well, and I think that Rick was pretty much at the same time looking, doing the same thing Tomas was doing. Is that he was like, "Oh, you just slipped. I know what you did, and as soon as I have an opportunity, you're going to pay for it."
Yeah, and I really, that's what I was saying before about Rick and Daryl's partnership. They he couldn't have really picked anyone better as his right hand. Yeah.
A lot of trust for each other, and Daryl deserves every bit of it.
Would you have thought that they would be at this point when the first scene they had together, he was trying to stab Rick with a knife?
Well, no, and especially when you got the whole time at the farm where Daryl is doing everything but be close to everybody else. The last thing I would have thought is that Daryl and Rick would be like a team.
Yeah. Like you could do worse than have Daryl as his right hand.
Oh, well, yeah. No argument there. That's why he's become one of the most popular characters on the show.
So, oh, by the way, Juliet, I just looked it up, is the 13-year-old daughter of Capulet and the play's female protagonist. Romeo is the 17-year-old son of Montague and the play's male protagonist.
Okay, I stand corrected.
So, ha ha. No. Everything I found never.
I'm going to ignore that.
Everything everything I saw didn't have an age attached to Romeo. They only said that Juliet was 13.
So, well, and I remember first learning that when I by my professors in college. So I'll take their word.
And of course, college professors know everything.
They do when they're grading you. Okay, so let's go to the knife through the head since I've been having my finger like hover over this.
The knife through the head of the machete.
Coming at me, bro.
Yeah. Machete is a knife.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. Shit happens.
No!
Easy now. I got it. And get down on your knees.
We don't have no affiliation with what just happened. Tell him, Oscar.
Stop talking, man.
So
the first time I saw that, my mouth dropped.
I think someone needs to give him an aspirin. He's got a splitting headache.
Oh, boo.
I know.
But yeah, the first time I saw that, I couldn't believe it. Like, I knew something was going to happen from just the way Rick was looking at him. Like, I knew he was like, you're done for. But to have him just like do something so ruthless.
Well, and so and that's the other thing is in the show, almost everything like that has a buildup to it that you're, you know, you can expect to happening. That just came out of nowhere. And I think that's what made it so much more impactful to the viewers. Is that. Yeah. It seemed like it was like his shooting at the bar. It was just so reactionary, and it came out of nowhere that it ends up being that much more impactful.
Yeah, and I think even more so because was in the bar, those guys were drawing on him at that moment, right?
Are
about to.
They were about to.
So in this one, it's kind of like there was this moment of them just freezing in time before he struck. So it's like you're just waiting there to see what's going to happen. It's just like such a tense moment.
Well, it was pretty much the same as the bar scene. I mean, you still had that pause before the quick draw, which is, you know, when you're hearing the whistling and Clint Eastwood walks up. And it's high noon. But that pause was definitely a pregnant one to the point where you knew somebody was going to make a move. You're just waiting to see who it was. You got a prisoner who doesn't have enough guts to be the first man to stand up. And Rick, who has no freaking problem being the first man to stand up.
No, and he showed that he's already shown that, but it just continues
that was without
to show
thought.
That,
that was, he didn't even have to stop and think about it. That's the thing that I liked about it, is that he knew this guy was a danger to me and my people. I'm going to take him out. And Tomas was too busy, because he's the guy who stands up against authority. He's too busy going, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? Rick showed him.
Yeah, he didn't interpret that I'm going to kill you look on Rick's face.
Sorry. I've got a cough. I've got like this tickle when I take a deep breath. All right. Yes. And with that, I'm going to basically jump ahead. We know about after the murder, Andrew swings a bat at Rick, but Rick kicks him and he flees. Rick chases after him while Oscar and Axel are, you know, basically held at gunpoint by T-Dog and Daryl. Rick chases Andrew through the prison yard, where the prisoner is soon surrounded by walkers. As he comes back in, Rick locks him outside and warns, you better run. Meanwhile, Herschel, anything you want to say about that? I got nothing to say.
Just really quickly, it's like, do you really think he thought that not to think about this guy again later?
No, I think...
Because we know in the next episode that he should have thought about him.
Yeah, he should have. And Rick is probably kicking himself now. But at that time, when it looks like he's trapped in a small little yard with a bunch of walkers and no way of that you could see of escaping, what would make you think he's not dead?
I think he thought he was done for.
Yeah, and I would have done the same thing, thought he was done.
I can see that, and that's why I guess I'm a little less, you know, Rick's shock in the next, you know, when he finds out that the guy is still doing stuff later is a little, you know, off-putting, because it's kind of like, well, why would you be shocked, though, that this guy's resourceful enough? I mean, one of the reasons why he's probably alive is because he's one of Tomas's, you know, biggest admirers.
I would be kind of shocked that this guy, instead of running for his life, he's planning this elaborate revenge. Who does that?
Somebody that's really pissed off.
A guy named Andrew.
Yes.
So
I don't think anybody could have predicted that.
Beware of Andrews. If you're ever in this situation and you're about to lock somebody out with a bunch of walkers, ask him his name. If his name's Andrew, you're screwed.
I'll remember that.
Let's talk about Lori getting her face eaten or not.
Yes, Lori gets her face eaten, sort of. Lori, meanwhile, Herschel stops breathing and Lori performs CPR on him. While he is coming to, he suddenly grabs for Lori's head to give her a big old kiss. which is what I would do if Lori was giving me CPR.
Yes, you'd eat her face.
No, I'd give her a kiss. Cause Sarah's,
you'd eat her.
Sarah's very attractive.
If you don't like Lori, you would eat her face.
Carl. Now, here's the part, though. Of course, they did a good job scaring us, because we were all thinking that's what was going to happen.
Yep.
I mean, everybody knew. But what I loved was the reveal as the camera pulled back and showed Carl with the gun.
Yeah.
Just beat it right on Herschel.
He was waiting for Herschel to eat his mom's face so he could plug them both.
I mean, talk about reactionary, though. That's why I say Carl is a great warrior. That is warrior reaction right there.
Well trained. Well trained by his dad.
I don't even know if it's as much training as it is instinct.
Yeah, I think at that point for him, it's instinct. Because obviously, again, we'll go back to we don't know about the 8 months. But I don't think there was a lot of training involved. Carl seems to be learning through watching everybody else.
Yeah, he seems to be picking things up more and more on instinct than anything.
So that, it becomes instinct at that point. So I think it's great that he was ready to shoot Herschel and his mom.
Right. And he didn't, and he reacted perfectly. He reacted bringing it up, but he didn't take the shot until he was sure.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's training. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just being a smartass. Go ahead.
I've been noticing a lot of little things that he's done, like the whole thing with having his gun ready. And when Rick went back outside to meet, to see what the prisoners, you know, when the prisoners came in?
Yeah.
To the cell block? He immediately, without a word, Rick ran out and he immediately close and lock the door after him. You know, little things like that, that I think show that they were all kind of like, you know, trained by Rick following his leadership.
I don't know if that's so much training, though. I mean, training doesn't teach you how to anticipate, you know, covering for somebody else like that. What that takes is a relationship and learning how other people think and do things.
Yeah.
You know, I've been trained in law enforcement, but, you know, I worked great with the first partner that I had because we were partners for, you know, over a year. And by the end, you know, by the end, we could anticipate and knew exactly what each other was thinking or doing without even having to, you know, talk about it. We could just kind of glance at each other or compensate because we knew each other's mannerisms and actions so well. And I think that's what Carl and Daryl.
Well, and there are things both, you can't train for.
Right.
I mean, and these are circumstances that you can't train for. They just happen and you try to find the best way to deal with it as a team.
So, yeah, I mean, training, there's certainly training going on. But as far as a lot of what is happening, you know, and them covering for each other and the way that they're working as that we keep putting it, a well-oiled machine, I don't think that so much comes from training as it does experience.
I would agree with that.
Well, I mean, yeah, that too. I don't mean that they take classes or anything like that. It's just they, you know, just the 10 months that they spent together just learning from their environment.
Yes.
It's sort of a training ground.
It is. Yeah. I mean, it
creates instincts.
That's why they have, you know, the term, what is it? Field time, battle tested. What are some of the other military terms, Jeff?
Well, I know field time, battle tested. Let's see. I don't know. I'm drawing a blank right now on all the fun military stuff.
Yeah. But you know, and that's what they say is, you know, the experience, you know, actually being in battle prepares you more for battle than any amount of training.
Right. It's basically experience in the field that gives you more training than actually going through a training course.
Right. So, and I think that's what's going on with them when we see them, you know, 8 months later, not 10 months because.
No, I just want to throw out there. They give it math at this point. Stop doing math, man. Stop doing math.
Oh, I have a headache.
Hurt your brain. Yeah, see what you did to yourself.
It hurts.
All I want to say about the CPR incident is, given everything we've discussed about Lori, and I know how we all felt about Lori, I mean, I still had a little defensive aspect just to throw this out there because, you know, I knew that everything Lori was doing wasn't just to destroy the two most important men in her life. But, you know, given all of this, though, and the hatred that we know that was existing out there on the boards and such, for Lori, is there anybody in the world that would say that part of them kind of hoped that Herschel did wake up as a walker and eat her face?
No. I mean, outside of the cool factor. No.
I know some people did wish that.
I just thought exactly. It was going to happen. It was never a wish. It was I just thought it was going to happen. So,
but
I was scared for a second there.
Yeah, they actually had me on edge the first time I watched that with that part, which is hard to do.
So. Of course, you sit there. And what I did was sit there and go, what is she doing?
Yes.
Stop yes. that. What are you?
Are you an idiot?
Yeah.
Like, and then, of course, Herschel does what any self-respecting man would do. You reach up and you grab a hold and you give him a big kiss.
Meanwhile, after Tomas's death, And Andrew ran away.
Yes, Andrew ran away. Then you have, let's see, the big discussion between Rick and all of them, and Axel insisting he and Oscar were not a part of Tomas's plan.
Which is another follower instinct.
Yes.
Is, wait, we don't know anything. I wasn't with him.
I just hung around with him
because I didn't have a choice.
Yeah. And then, of course, Rick leaves him there. And, you know, they actually say, you're going to leave us here? And he says, yep, take it or leave it. That's the deal. And then, of course,
Rick makes a deal.
Rick makes deals, expects people to stick to him.
Yeah, that's kind of, even after all that, he's still sticking to their bargain.
Yeah, exactly. And I like T-Dog's little thing at the end of, you know, you may want to take the bodies outside and burn them.
Yeah, and I like when Daryl says, sorry about your friends, man.
Yeah. Rick and the group then, Rick meets up with the rest of the group while Herschel is waking up. He uncuffs Herschel, and Herschel reaches up and shakes his hand as Beth cries joyfully.
See, Beth isn't really there. She's only paying attention to the good things.
She blocks everything else out.
It's, I think from her suicide, you know, her, when she was suicidal, is that she's not really in touch with what's going on realistically, because she's really just paying more attention to what's good about what's happening. Because you don't see her, even from this, you know, even up to today, we haven't seen her actually respond to the real world that they're living in. She's still constantly clinging to the good things, you know, to anything positive. And this is another one of those moments. I mean, she was seeing, we talked to earlier about, she was sewing the, you know, sewing up the leg of one of Herschel's pants, is that she was seeing the positive side of it. Is that, well, if he wakes up, he's going to need pants that fit. In this case, you know, he wakes up and she's like all cheery and stuff. I mean, this is a girl that doesn't have an entire grip on what's really happening.
She's not playing with a full deck of cards.
Exactly. I mean,
we're just going to start throwing out old euphemisms.
Yeah, let's just euphemisms everywhere. There we go.
Yeah, well, everybody was happy in that moment.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Both of the girls were crying, and I don't know. Well, I mean, that's her.
Herschel's a good guy, unless you saw behind the mask and you find out that he's not that good of a guy.
So
that was his old life.
Yeah.
But,
before he found God.
So outside, afterwards, outside, Carol is cutting into the female walker that they gathered before into the abdomen, while unbeknownst to her, somebody is watching.
There's a spy.
And now we know who that is.
And then we get to the best part of the whole episode.
And then finally, Rick joins Lori on the catwalk, and they sort of have a touching moment.
We'll start cleaning tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll give Carl a safe place to do whatever he does these days.
For the record, I don't think you're a bad mother.
Well, life is a different story. Better or worse, right? I mean, what are we going to do? Hire lawyers and get divorced and split our assets? We got food. Herschel's alive. Today was a good day.
He'd be dead if it weren't for you.
You're the one that acted fast. If you hadn't done what you did, I thought maybe you were coming out here to talk about us. Maybe there's nothing to talk about anymore.
We're awful grateful for what you did.
And as he walks away, Lori,
by touching, you mean he touched her, right?
And as he walks away, Lori tearfully rests her cheek where his hand once laid.
Which she will never wash again, if she does any kind of washing. So by touching, you mean that he touched
her? Yes, okay, we get it.
In the literal sense,
I don't really have a lot to say about that, because we basically beat the whole Rick Lori relationship to death. We beat that thing like a dead horse. Wait.
Well, I just
here we go with another
that
euphemism. Go ahead.
To me, that's proof that their marriage is not over. There's still love there. If they had time to talk, they could put it back together.
I never doubted that there was ever love there, but you need more than just that to have a relationship. And that's where, and that's where, you know, the disconnect is. And I think that's where me and Jeff are arguing over everything, because obviously
you know, he still wanted his family. He still loved his family. That's why he sought them out. But, you know, that's what many people refer to as the honeymoon period. And then reality set in, and it was back to the same relationship norms and the same feelings they had towards each other. You can still have love and still have animosity.
That's my argument, is that it wasn't the same. It was different.
I don't think it was the same either, just for the simple fact that Shane was the one, you know, throwing a wrench in the works.
Throwing Rick under the bus.
Yeah, there we go.
They didn't really have a chance to work on a relationship because of him.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, you're caught in a doomsday situation, and Rick didn't even have a chance to make things work with his wife because somebody else had already done it. I mean, it's kind of hard being the man in a relationship and finding out that another man has already taken your place. I mean, come on. It's not a case of he wasn't trying. He tried. Right from the get-go. I just actually, about this scene in particular, I have one that I can actually think of observations in this. Is that, do you notice how Lori tries to throw a lot of, like, generosity towards Rick? And Rick is trying to throw a lot of generosity towards Lori by saying that, you know, Herschel wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for you. And Lori's like, yeah, well, none of us would be alive if it wasn't for you.
And you know what? He still wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for Daryl.
Himself?
If it wasn't for Daryl taking out the walker on their way back, or if it wasn't for Carl getting the bandages.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of shoulder rubbing going on. And what does Rick do when he walks away? Rubs her shoulder. You got to love it. It's just like the greatest amount of... Yeah, I love that scene from that standpoint, is that everybody's trying to pat themselves on the back, and Rick ends it with going, yeah, okay.
All right, you ready to end this?
Yeah, let's end this.
Okay. Hey, I pushed the button.
I thought you were going to end it.
All right, well, that was... Episode 47 of The Walking Dead Week.
An epic episode 47.
Week in review, and a long episode. We're almost up to 2 hours right now.
And we almost fought. That was the best part.
I know. So don't forget to call in and let us know what you think about Rick and Lori's relationship. You can also go to our SpeakPipe account by simply going to CreeperCast.com and clicking on the leave a message on the left hand side, or, you know, make it really simple, go to creepercast.com/feedback. That'll take you to where you can leave a message. You can also call us 503-454-6941 and leave, you know, them old fangled phone thingies that people have. Yes. You use that to leave a message on our listener feedback hotline. You can also email us at feedback@creepercast.com. Leave a message on Facebook at facebook.com/creepercast, or on Twitter at twitter.com/creepercast. And don't forget about the Creepercast iTunes sweepstakes. Go to creepercast.com/iTunes or creepercast.com/TWD iTunes. So many things to remember. Just remember the last part. iTunes, TWD iTunes, feedback. Them three places. Go there. Let us know what you think, and give us some love for the show, because I give Jeff a lot of love. I love you, Jeff.
I love you too, Jason.
And I love you, Casey.
I love you too.
Oh, that makes me feel good. So much love going around tonight. Hey, I want to thank you guys for joining us. This has been a great conversation.
And a merry future Christmas.
Yes, and a happy Christmas Hansa Kwanzaa.
Yes, that too.
All right.
Talk to you next week.
See you guys next week.